Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
You know, you could say that, but it's not true, because if I'm going to the Major League Baseball website, I should be able to trust their stats, shouldn't I?
No. You said that you double and triple checked everything, so that means you would go to a couple more websites, and you did not do that.
There's no technicalities.
Technically, Craig Kimbrell is an active player, because Tony told me you have to notify Major League Baseball that you've retired.
No.
Yes, he's not active.
You know why he's not active?
Well, because maybe he's not playing.
Because he's not playing. So if you're not playing, can you be active?
But he could play tomorrow.
But he's not. So is he active?
He's not on the team.
According to MLB.com.
No, it's not according to MLB. It just has his name and some stats.
I'm going to talk to AJ Casavell about this tomorrow.
Yeah, you do that.
This will be an easy one.
He's the writer for MLB.com.
He's just going to laugh at you.
Well, that happens a lot, so. No, AJ's a really nice guy. He's not going to laugh at me, I don't think. I hope not.
Tomorrow's a Friar Friday, by the way.
It is.
Don't forget, Friar Friday's Padre player interviews at 3:30 and 5:30 tomorrow afternoon.
And tomorrow, because the Dodgers are coming into town, 97.3 The Fan is handing out signs at the entrance saying BLA.
What do they say, Scrappy?
BLA! BLA!
Yep.
BLA!
You know what? That's the only thing Boston ever came up with that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'll give him credit for that.
I definitely agree with that.
I couldn't ever agree more with that.
Number five.
Oh, it's been fun to be back around you guys.
For those who don't know, Thomas is a huge Boston
annoyingly,
everything.
So.
And at the same time, San Diego everything.
Huge
it just
Boston
makes
guy.
No sense at all.
And just to update you, Boston is the current NFL champion, Major League Baseball
we
champion.
We have to talk about this.
And they could win the Stanley Cup and the NBA this year.
Ugh.
Yeah, exactly.
Yesterday.
We're not letting them in this room if any
no,
of those happen.
I agree.
Yeah, if all those other
we
things
will
happen.
We will be running the board.
Yesterday.
Will be running the board.
Good idea, because yesterday during the
bad idea, because time Thomas didn't run the board, the show went off
Touché.
The rails.
Touché.
Chris was doing the post game yesterday. Thomas and I were both here, and we need to play some highlights of out of towners. And Thomas kept going, "Oh, play the Mitchie Fourbags highlight. Play the Mitchie Fourbags." I'm like, "Who is Mitchie Fourbags?" He goes, "Mitch Moreland, man, Mitch Moreland."
Oh my god! See, they come up. See, the Bostonites come up with these weird nicknames.
So we got
Mitchie Fourbags. So wack.
I got to be honest with you. If I was Mitch Moreland, I would try to denounce that nickname as fast as possible.
All right, let's get into it. That's a good point.
Number five.
All right, I'm sure that Chris, when I saw this news this morning, this was the first thing I thought of was this is the best Big Five topic of all time, because Todd McShay of ESPN put his way too early 2020 NFL mock draft out today.
Oh, this is right up Chris's alley.
Alley.
Hey, are you serious? I was up at 6 in the morning reading this.
Oh, yes, I'm sure you were.
Yeah.
And Todd McShay has the Dolphins as the number one pick. He also has the Dolphins, and keep in mind, the Dolphins just traded for Josh Rosen, who was drafted 2 years ago as the number one pick for Arizona, and he was traded to the Dolphins. Now, he has the Dolphins taking Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa with the first pick in the 2020 draft, which makes Josh Rosen like, what, he's just going to keep going to different teams until
Chop
he finds the right one?
Is what it makes him.
So, Chris, is Josh Rosen a lame duck quarterback this year for the Dolphins?
First of all,
that's the Dolphin
expert.
First of all, Todd McShay. I think nothing of Todd McShay.
Oh, man.
Zero.
Okay.
Secondly, if Josh Rosen is not good enough to lead Miami out of the number one position season, then yes, he's a lame duck quarterback, and they should go ahead and draft the kid from Alabama. Josh Rosen can keep this from happening. If he's good and he leads Miami to 7 or 8 wins, then they won't be in a position to draft Tua. So I think it'll answer itself. If they can't get out of the number one pick position, then obviously Josh Rosen is not the answer.
I'm sorry. Why do they keep doing this to Paul Pierce? They keep comparing his career to, like, greats. They're comparing who had a better career, Paul Pierce or Kawhi Leonard. I digress. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Is Josh Rosen a lame duck this year in Miami?
I think Chris answered that as eloquently as
he
can.
How does he come into the year?
He's got a chance to show what he can do.
He's not coming into the year as a lame duck.
Yeah.
He's coming in here as the starting quarterback.
I mean, if they go 11-5, get into the playoffs, they're not going to be in position to draft Tua, so he's going to stay the quarterback.
Right. And he's not the starting quarterback. He has been said that he has to actually win the job.
Yeah.
But I think it would be good for him
if he sat out a few games and let Fitzpatrick play.
If he's lame duck, it'll be his own doing because, as Chris said, he plays well enough, they won't be picking that first pick.
Can that guy get any more of a chip on his shoulder? He already said he had one chip on his shoulder, and then he had another chip on his shoulder.
It's one thing to have a chip on your shoulder. It's a completely different thing to use that chip and actually go out and prove that you belong. Ultimately, that chip is great. It fuels you. But if you aren't producing on the field, that chip is doing you no good.
And I got bad news for Josh Rosen. He's not on any better team this year than he was last year.
I think that's why Todd McShay is picking him to go first.
Maybe
overall.
That is why.
Maybe.
Number four.
Have you guys heard what's going on in Philadelphia with Bryce Harper and the Phillies fans? Because he's had a relatively rough start to the season in his terms, but the Phillies fans, they're not happy because this won't surprise you at all. But the fans are even booing Bryce Harper at home after signing his 13-year, $330 million contract in spring training. He started the year hitting .231, 6 homers, and 20 RBIs. His on-base percentage ranks 43rd in baseball. He's 10th in most strikeouts and 67th in OPS. So, Tony, with those stats in mind, is it wrong for the fans to boo Bryce Harper?
No, it's not.
Wow.
Because that's what we expect from
Philly
fans, right?
Yeah. And Bryce Harper is not a dummy. He knew that if he played in 100%. Philadelphia, that was a possibility.
Listen, this was always a possibility, right? Because there's a reason why, although Bryce got most of the most money, there's a reason why the consensus around the league of who the better player was Manny Machado. And that's because when you look at the numbers, the consistency is there. Bryce, he's always been a guy that, for the most part, hits some home runs and gets you RBIs. He's not a guy that really, other than that, he's not an average guy. He can be an on-base guy depending on what type of year he's having, but their MVP year it's been a lot in between that. So I do think Bryce will ultimately pick it up. I don't think he'll stay in the 230s. I think he'll be a better hitter by the time in the season. But I certainly think it's okay. When you are the highest paid guy in all of baseball, there is an extra bit of scrutiny that comes with it. And then you sign to go to Philadelphia. And there's extra scrutiny there. So all of this is, I'm sure, expected. If you're Bryce Harper, I think he'd probably expect that. And he'll just roll the punches and keep playing.
What do you think, Chris?
Well, believe me, if Manny Machado runs around under a fly ball as lazily as Bryce Harper did the other day and has it drop at his feet, the Padre fans will boo Manny Machado. I mean, and Padre fans are the nicest fans in all of baseball. Harper deserved this booing, not necessarily for how, you know, the fact he's off to a bit of a slower start for his standards. I mean, he is a career .277 hitter, so he's not terrible on average.
Not at all.
.231, so he's below that right
average,
now.
When you said average, we're both thinking up in the 300 range.
But he kind of lounged after a fly ball. You can't do that. You can't do that, especially if you're Bryce Harper. I mean, your scrutiny is way more than anybody's. I think Machado's made a concerted effort this year to make sure that absolutely nothing could be misconstrued for him taking it half speed on any play. He just doesn't want to be put in that position. He's smart that way, understanding that there are people watching Manny Machado. He made all this money. He's going to San Diego. A lot of people think he dogs it sometimes. He's going to make sure that people don't have that ammunition. Bryce Harper's got to do the same thing.
Do you guys think Manny Machado, because side topic real quick, because Manny has been having fun with the Atlanta mascot, the Braves blooper, and so we've heard all about that. Do you think that this is the Manny that he's always been, or is this a new Manny?
If I'm being honest, I don't. I think Manny's smart. He's very aware of what the perception is of him nationally, not necessarily here in San Diego, but what it is of him nationally. So he's smart. He's going to do things to try to show people that there's a different side to Manny. And I actually have really enjoyed watching Manny because he hasn't, in my opinion, hasn't gone far and above to try to prove that I'm not this guy. He's just been himself.
Yep.
Like, I still see him make plays at third, and it looks like it's the most nonchalant thing ever. But
That's the beauty in watching him play third, is that it looks like that on 90% of the balls hit to him. And I enjoy it. I respect the fact that he's been himself. I appreciate it, actually.
There are a lot of reasons. It's a very lengthy list why he is Manny Machado.
Chris, that is a great name.
I still love the guy.
Hopefully you get to interview him here coming up soon.
Yeah, tomorrow night would be a good night to interview him.
Number three.
Syndergaard, it's a high fly ball, deep toward left. Winker going back. He watches it sail. That ball is gone. A home run for Noah Syndergaard. And a long home run to the opposite field. The Mets have a 1-0 lead.
Mets star pitcher Noah Syndergaard has struggled this season, but he had a big game today in the 1-0 win against the Mets. He pitched a shutout with 10 strikeouts. And
Excuse me? Who was it against?
The Reds.
Thank you.
Oh, I see. I said against the Mets.
You did.
Okay, I missed that.
I was like, what is he talking about? I'm going to get to that.
You know, you normally don't have to pay very close attention to notice a scraby mess up, but that time you had to be...
He slid it in there.
Yeah,
I did. I wrote it in there. I wrote that, and I read, I'm Ron Burgundy right now.
Oh, my goodness.
So he beat the Reds 1-0. He pitched a shutout with 10 strikeouts and accounted for the only run in the game by hitting that homer you just heard in the third inning. And according to the Elias Sports Bureau, Syndergaard became the first pitcher to homer and throw a shutout in a 1-0 win since Bob Welch for the Dodgers on June 17, 1983, which also came against the Reds. So, Chris, after a performance like today, does Noah Syndergaard show he is worth the extension that he wants?
Well, he needs a few more performances like this. This is obviously, a big day. I mean, you win 1-0, you hit the home run that accounts for the only run. I mean, you can't have a much better day than that. Strikes out 10, pitches a four-hitter, walks one. But 2-3, 5.02, is not going to get you the kind of money you're hoping for. So, you know, Noah Syndergaard's got to pitch a lot more games like this in order to get what he wants. You know, it's interesting, Jacob DeGrom has struggled until last night. He pitched very well in his game last night, but he's also struggled this year. So neither of the two Mets, superstar have been up to snuff yet this season. But it's early. Syndergaard's a good pitcher. He's got to stay healthy, and he's got to do this more often. But that today is a great day. My goodness, you can't do a whole lot better than that.
Tony, what do you think?
I think these are the performances that he's going to have to continue to put together if he wants the type of money that he's talking about.
He wants the world.
When, you know, a lot of times, especially young guys can get caught up in the chatter. I mean, we've heard more from Noah Syndergaard than we have seen him pitch in this season so far. So this is what the Mets want. They're in second place, second or third place in that division right now, and they're going to need him to pitch like this on a consistent basis. DeGrom, as Chris said, came back yesterday, got into some trouble in the fourth, but managed to get out of it and then kind of cruise from there. Hopefully that's a good sign for the Mets as well. I think they're just going to need more performances like this.
Number two.
More than 200 women's hockey players, including Team USA stars Hillary Knight and Kendall Coyne Schofield, and Canada's Marie Philippe Poulin.
Let's go with it.
Oh, gosh.
How's it spelled? P-O-U-L-I-N?
Yeah, Poulin?
No.
Poulin?
No.
Poulin? Putin?
Probably the closest you were was that third try.
Poulin? Poulin?
Anyway.
Mulan?
Just say some Canadian
move
player.
Move on. They announced they will not be playing in professional league next season because, quote, we cannot make a sustainable living with playing in the current state of the professional game. Having no health insurance and making as low as $2,000 a season means players can't adequately train and prepare to play at the highest level, end quote. And there's been a lot of talk about how some of these leagues, the men's leagues, professional leagues, need to help support maybe the women's leagues. So, Tony, do you think men's leagues have some sort of responsibility to help the women's leagues? It sounds like the league doesn't have much funding.
I'm glad you asked him first.
It's like, man, you had to ask me
this
first.
This is not a misogynistic question.
Oh, but it's going to be looked at as a misogynistic answer.
I'll say this. When you're the NBA and you have a women's league, I do think it's part of their responsibility to help keep that league going. Now,
and
I don't
think they've done that.
And they have. And I don't know enough about these hockey leagues that are, I don't know where they at.
They're I didn't even know there was a women's hockey.
I didn't either, honestly.
They're here. I didn't either, but they're here in the United States.
Okay, yeah. I mean,
I'm the hockey guru of this particular group.
If you don't know, that's a great point.
Right, because you should have started with him on this one, actually.
Just how the cookie
crumbles. I think it's a tough one because you don't want to say they should be completely ignored by the NHL, but the NHL does not have the same power.
I was about to say that.
Right?
Yeah, they don't have the same.
They don't have the same cachet. They don't have the deep pocketbooks like the NBA does. So, unfortunately for women's professional hockey, you know, they're going to have to go out and do as well as they possibly can, and the amount of money they're able to make is going to have to be equal to about the money they are paid. I don't know any other way to look at it. You know, the NHL players had to take a big pay cut 6 or 7 years ago just because they weren't filling up arenas anymore. They weren't drawing the kind of money to make the $4 or $5 million salaries that they wanted. Yeah. So I think it's similar to this.
That is a good point because that was where I was going to go. The NHL, they're fighting to keep their NHL game relevant and in everybody's face. I don't know that they're in a place where they could afford to take on the women's league and make it flourish. I mean, just think, the NBA has poured a lot of money into the WNBA.
I've never been to a game, have you?
I haven't, but I watch it on TV from time to time when it's on. And I think part of the issue, I mean, even that, it's still, WNBA was still having some issues up until maybe a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like that's going to necessarily fix everything either.
I mean, playing professional hockey for $2,000 a season and no health insurance is crazy to
Sounds like what I used to do every Tuesday night.
Guess what? That's
just
pretty
for
much
fun.
That's the dream of being a professional athlete in your sport.
I was going to say, that's probably around what those minor leaguers are making down there.
That's true. It's true. Number one. All right, the Boston Red Sox aren't really that far removed from one of their worst starts in franchise history, but at least they don't have this clubhouse distraction because, according to WEEI's Rob Bradford, he reported this week that Fortnite has been banned from their locker room, and he says, quote, it is counterproductive to putting their best foot forward on the field. And if you remember, starting pitcher David Price actually admitted that he plays up to 3 hours a day around the same time that he was battling carpal tunnel syndrome and all this other stuff. So Bradford also said that Nathan Eovaldi says he hasn't seen it this year. Usually everybody had it set up in their lockers, but I haven't seen it. Maybe if we were doing a little better, maybe we would be doing it, but you can't be losing and playing Fortnite in the clubhouse. End quote.
Big facts.
Chris, do you think that the quote unquote parental rules have a chance to cause toxicity in this locker room?
Wow, those were big words for you.
Toxicity.
Yeah, wow.
Those were not big
impressed
words.
Impressed. Well, I think if the Red Sox had just been playing Fortnite all along, they might not be 14-17. Maybe these guys aren't relaxed enough.
That is a good point.
Yeah, Nathan Eovaldi, though, is correct. I mean, when you're losing, it's not a good look to be playing video games. It's hard for me to answer this because I have no interest in playing a video game. If you set up the Fortnite in my locker and, you know, gave me the controls, I would walk away and go do something else. So
collect dust.
It's hard for me to really comment. I understand it's very popular for the players. And I don't see why the Red Sox should be the only ones that can't do it. They just got to keep it reasonable, like everything.
Right.
Keep it
moderation.
Moderation. Thank you,
Tony.
What was it? Philadelphia that smashed up the TVs last year?
Yes,
Carlos Santana.
Had enough of the Fortnite.
Yeah.
Does it have a chance to last? Yeah, I think it does because this is probably not driven by the coaches or our manager. This is probably driven by the players.
Yeah,
you think?
And I do because listen. When David Price is the one playing Fortnite, who in that locker room is going to say, hey, David, get off the video game, bro?
No one.
Probably no one. So you flip that, and maybe the next year, obviously, he comes around and is like, all right, we're going to chill. They get off to a bad start. It's like, all right, well, we can't ring it out until we start winning games. It's a little bit easier to man that clubhouse a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think it'll last at least as long as they need it to last.
Oh, man, I miss the Big Five so much.
You're about to cry.
I'm about to cry.
Is that
close,
it?
Close it up, Thomas. Close it up.
That is it for our Big Five.
We're Thomas, close it. Close it up.
Step away and take a break.
Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
Everybody's a little rusty. We haven't done it in a while. We're going to step away, take a break. When we come back, as we mentioned, the Padres routed the Braves 11-2 today, finishing a road trip 4-3. We'll talk about it when we come back. on The Reset. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Gwynn and Chris, 97.3 The Fan.
And as I mentioned, joining us now, the guy who will call this fight, a fight a lot of people are looking forward to, Brian Kenny, joins us here on 97.3 The Fan on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Brian, how you doing today?
Good, good. Good to be with you.
Great to have you with us. And, of course, we see Brian on the Major League Baseball Network. But boxing is, you're tops in boxing. And this is going to be a, tell us why this is such a big fight. I mean, everyone's excited about it. The records are outstanding. The titles are up for grabs. It's got it all.
Well, yeah, Canelo Alvarez is the middleweight champion of the world. He's one of the top fighters in the world, pound for pound. He might even be number one. His accomplishments are stellar already at the age of 28. He's had the two wars with Gennady Golovkin. Golovkin fights on DAZN June 8th. So if everything works out properly for Canelo and for Golovkin, you know, we can get a third fight, which would be outstanding. But in the meantime, here's the, you know, the guy who's probably the number two contender in the division, a worthy challenger in Daniel Jacobs. So this is a true world championship fight. It's difficult to be the, you know, the one world champion, but Canelo is it. And Daniel Jacobs is legit and should give him some trouble. I mean, Canelo is favored, but Jacobs is expected to make this an excellent fight.
Yeah, Brian, I got a chance to watch Daniel Jacobs on occasions. Very impressive fighter. You know, you being the boxing guy in this, where can Jacobs kind of give some trouble to Canelo?
Well, he's a bit quicker. He gives angles. He likes to trade. He doesn't have some perfect style for Canelo Alvarez, right? Because a perfect style would be a guy who can get in and out. Danny likes to trade a little bit more, but that'll make it more exciting. And look, Danny Jacobs was able to trade with Gennady Golovkin, who's the most dangerous guy in the division, and that was at a time when Golovkin was still, you know, kind of at his peak. So he, you know, that Jacobs isn't going to back away. And if you're standing in front of Canelo, it's going to be a firefight. So I think there's going to be real moments here where they get after it.
One thing that a lot of us have noticed heading into this fight, Brian Kenny joining us to talk about this big boxing match on Saturday night between Alvarez and Jacobs, there hasn't been a bunch of trash talk and a bunch of screaming from both camps and guys attacking their trainers and owners and handlers. And, you know, this is something we're getting used to a little bit, unfortunately, in the MMA side of things. Is boxing okay with this kind of fight, where there isn't the trash talk and we're just focusing on these guys doing their work in the ring?
Well, I hope so. Yeah. I mean, the best wars I've ever seen have been guys who are not looking to fight on Friday afternoon.
Right.
You know, you're fighting on Saturday night. So, you know, stop with the nonsense. And I think it's just part and parcel of the place we are in right now as far as media and social media, where you can get a lot of attention if you do ridiculous things. And any physical confrontation, even if it's contrived and ridiculous, or you curse at somebody, or you say something about someone's relative, it gets all this little, you know, inflammatory attention. And then people say, oh, and it's getting buzzed. And unfortunately, even the mainstream media reacts to the wrong things. And I would hope they would react to this, meaning two sportsmen who are going to get after each other. Because, you know, the bottom line, it's not like, you know, in baseball or hockey or anything else, these guys are going to fight. No one has to tell them, hey, you know, there might be a fight. No, there's going to be a fight. We're going to make you fight. You're going to fight each other. So you don't have to talk about, oh, I'm going to punch you in the face. Well, I would hope you would punch him in the face about, you know, about 300 times. You're going to have every opportunity. So you don't need that nonsense. You don't need it at all. And I prefer guys who are sportsmanlike, who could shake hands, and then the drama is fight night.
Brian Kenny joins us, boxing's play-by-play for DAZN and MLB Network. Brian, I followed you a lot when you were at ESPN covering a lot of boxing. You've switched over to the baseball side. Has boxing been like your first love? You're very knowledgeable about it. Or is baseball your first love?
I know baseball is my first love. I was definitely a baseball fan my whole life. And then I got into boxing when I started going to the Custom Auto Catskill Boxing Club in 1986. Mike Tyson was there at the time training. He was 18 years old and then became the youngest heavyweight champion of all time while I was there training in that gym. So that's where I started to really love it. And I called some fights too, Floyd Patterson, former heavyweight champion of the world, gold medalist, was in New Paltz, New York, and upstate. I went to his gym. I also covered Floyd, and Tracy Patterson, his son, was also a world champion. He's the guy that fought Arturo Gatti when Gatti won his first title. So I have all these boxing roots, but I'm, you know, still mainly a baseball fan and historian. When I got to ESPN, you know, I found, hey, you know, if you need a guy that can do some boxing, you know, I'm here.
I'm your guy, right.
And that's how it started, and that's I started doing it for SportsCenter. Friday Night Fights launched in 1998, and I've just been doing it ever since.
Yeah, and you do it great. Brian Kenny is with us. It is Alvarez. It is Jacobs. It is Saturday night at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. You can stream it on DAZN. Tell us a little bit about that venture, DAZN, and what that's all about, because I'm sure there's some young people that are excited to stream this fight and watch it in this particular manner, and then there's probably some older folks like me that are a little worried that maybe they won't be able to hook it up in time. You know what I mean?
Well, really, I guess I have to think of a way. Like, we all figured out how to do the directions, right? You could figure out whether it's Waze or Google Maps or whatever. Like, we all figured that out. If you can figure that out, you can get DAZN. You can figure out how to get an app. You can go online and sign up. It's really not that hard. And yeah, and at a certain point, you know, remember when, you know, your mom and dad would have trouble, you know, with the VCR. Yeah, at first it's intimidating, and then after a while you're like, this is not that hard. And bottom line is, fans for boxing were used to paying to see the biggest fights.
Yeah.
And now instead of paying, hey, it was getting up to $75 a night, you know, for one fight on pay-per-view, 75. And now it's $100 for the whole year. And you get, now it's, you know, Anthony Joshua is the heavyweight champ. Canelo is the middleweight champ. Golovkin was just signed up. And we have world championship fights, you know, once, twice a month. You know, real, you know, top-level fighters, the guys that aren't, you know, getting all the mainstream press, but are, you know, hardcore fight fan favorites. Guys like, you know, Tevin Farmer or Katie Taylor, you know, great, you know, Olympic champion from Ireland. And, you know, we do this like every month. So, you know, we're here for all the fights, you know, month after month, and then every so often you get a big fight like this.
Brian, you're saying how this fight, Triple G's fight, could lead to a third fight. Did you watch the second fight?
Oh yeah.
Who did you have it being correct in Canelo being the winner?
Yeah, I did. I thought Canelo won that fight. The first fight, my sense, right, like when I'm first watching it, I think like most people, was that Golovkin won it. Right. However, I always add, that's not how you score a fight.
Right.
You know, you need to score round by round, and I could see it very plausible that that was a draw. I thought Canelo came on strong in the later rounds. I thought he won rounds. And in the second fight, I thought Canelo put rounds in the bank early and held on to win. So I don't look at it as controversial.
Right.
I look at it as close. It was reasonably close. I understand why Gennady Golovkin is upset, why he thinks he got ripped off. However, I don't think that was the case.
Well, maybe Scott Foster was reffing the match and it was a Houston Rockets tie-in or something. There's never been any concern about fixing any boxing, so we don't have to worry about that. Brian Kenny is with us. Hey, Brian, this is maybe a little off the side here, but is MMA been good for boxing in the long run or bad for boxing in the long run?
I don't know. Maybe it has tested it a bit, where they, you know, forced it to be competitive as a combat sport. You know, I'm not, but if it had never come about, would boxing have still just gotten bigger and bigger? That's a tough question. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think boxing has lost a little of its luster, but I think MMA has helped bring us back to the world of combat a little bit. And I'm not big on MMA at all, but I think I'm more interested in boxing now that MMA's come back. In a weird sort of way, it's kind of brought me back to
the mano a mano battle
that I missed for so many years.
MMA has made me appreciate the sweet science of boxing, like the ability to move and get out of the way of punches, not get necessarily hit in a slugfest all the time.
Yeah,
it makes me appreciate boxing a lot more.
Yeah, looking forward to this one.
I remember the debates, you know, like, 15, 20 years ago of, you know, what's going to happen and is boxing dead or will this bring more, you know, combat sports fans? And it sort of didn't for a while. Maybe it is now that a new generation comes up and they have both choices. There's a reason why boxing became boxing, because it is more aesthetically pleasing than a fight. Like, there's a reason why even MMA isn't like a street fight.
Right.
Because street fights actually aren't exciting. They're a spectacle. It's frightening, but they end very quickly, you know. And so actually, when you put, you know, Marcus of Queensberry rules, put gloves on somebody and you can only strike him in certain areas, it makes it more difficult. So when you get a guy hurt, you have to come up with some creative things to still finish him. So that's what I say. Combat sports, MMA, that's, you know, I appreciate that. I have great respect for it. I prefer to watch boxing, and I think that's what a lot of fans do now.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I think Saturday night everyone's going to prefer to watch this one. Check it out on DAZN. And Brian, I was joking. I can easily download an app, so I'm going to be able to watch the fight, and I look forward to your call. Thanks so much for joining us, talking a little boxing here in San Diego.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, guys. Good talking with you.
Gwen and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
Lots and lots of surprises, good or bad, going in Major League Baseball in the 2019 season. Chris and
I'm struggling with this.
Chris and I put together a five-team list of both good surprises, bad surprises. Let's get into it. Chris, you go first.
Number five.
I was waiting for that. You did not catch me, Thomas. All right, my number five surprise team in Major League Baseball so far this year is the Boston Red Sox. You know, they're getting it together a little bit right now. They've won 3-4 in a row here. But the fact that they're 14-17 and they're the defending World Series champions, I at least had to get them on the list at number five. I'm not overly concerned. I'm assuming Chris Sale is not going to go 0-25 this year. Boston will get it together. But for now, they are my fifth most surprising team in baseball.
My fifth most surprising team is also the Boston Red Sox, and they fall fifth on my list, really. They fall fifth on my list, really, because I don't think they'll be on the list very long. I think eventually, sometime in the next month and a half, they'll be back where they're supposed to be. That's why they're at five.
Up near the top.
Because they'll eventually fall out of this five.
Right. Yeah, this may be the only appearance the Red Sox make on this surprise list this year. What was so funny, by the way, Scrappy?
You both had Boston Red Sox, and Thomas was like grumbling over here.
Well, we could have had him higher, Thomas, if you wanted, but we spoke positively about them.
I know. You can't have a World Series hangover without winning the World Series, though.
That's how long did it take you to think of that one right there?
Ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho,
ho. Number four.
It took him, I think, 86 years to think of that.
Oh!
Hey-o!
Okie doke. My number four surprise team is the Arizona Diamondbacks. Pretty much universally picked no better than fourth and maybe even last in the NL West. They're actually ahead of the Padres right now by a half game in the standings. I kind of expected the Padres would be improved. I thought the Diamondbacks would be a whole lot worse, and trading all those great players away, I think most people thought they'd be a whole lot worse. But they're 18-13. They're only a game back of the Dodgers. That surprises me.
Number four on my list.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out which way I want to go here. Number four on my list is the Milwaukee Brewers. I would have thought, based on what we saw last year, based on what we saw really in the first month of the season, that they would be sitting higher than one game over 500. They sit 17-16, third in the division, behind the Cardinals, behind the Cubs. This actually, 1-5 in the NL Central looks much like it used to look, right? St. Louis always on the top, Cubs usually chasing, Brewers somewhere right there trying to chase both. I didn't expect it to be like this. I thought at least the Cubs would be in third, the Brewers would be in first, and St. Louis would be in second. But thus far, that bullpen has been a little creaky. They signed Gio Gonzalez because they needed some starting pitching, because that clearly is where they were inept at. And they're my number four team.
Josh Hader has not been automatic this year, and I think there's a pretty good reason for that. He seemed to pitch every inning of every postseason game last year. It may be taking its toll. I think you bring up a good point also to place the Brewers in this position, because they are still in third place, despite the fact that Christian Yelich is going triple crown crazy.
Yes.
Although he's missed the last couple of games with an injury.
Sore back.
Okay.
Number three.
My number three most surprising team right now is a team we're watching on television. That's the Washington Nationals. I picked them to win this division this year with the addition of Patrick Corbin. Obviously, they already had Scherzer. They already have Strasburg. They got a great closer in Sean Doolittle. But one thing they don't have that I didn't think about was middle relief. They have nobody to get it from the starters.
AKA the bridge.
Yes. Doolittle, I think, only has two or three saves because they never get him the ball with a lead. They can't hang on to it. They've had a couple of big injuries, I will say that. Trey Turner is out. Now Rendon is out. Zimmerman's been out. So there's time for Washington to turn it around a little bit. But, you know, they disappointed a lot last year. And I think if they keep disappointing the way they are this year, I don't think Dave Martinez is going to be long for that job.
I think you're correct.
Just saying.
Is this my number three right here?
Yep.
This is my number three. And my number three will be the New York Mets. I did not see this coming at all.
The Metropolitans.
The Metropolitans, yes. DeGrom, I know he's been solid. He won a, for crying out loud, he won a Cy Young with 8 wins, was it last year?
10. He got to 10.
He got to 10. But I didn't see this team being this good this early. Now, I say that with a caveat. Last year, they started off like gangbusters, too. They were in first place, and then they just, for the rest of the season, went the opposite direction. So, very surprised to see the Mets here. They've gotten some good starts. And the crazy part is DeGrom has struggled a little bit. We talked a little bit about Syndergaard earlier, his struggles in the season. Yet, they still sit 16-15 in the National League East. Not an easy division, but with Washington not really playing up to par, Atlanta's kind of, you know, playing 500 baseball, basically. Very surprised to see the Mets there.
You know, the Mets thought they were going to be there.
They
but
did.
Nobody agreed
they
with
did.
Them.
They did think they were going
right.
to be there.
So we'll see if it holds up.
Number two.
All right, my number two biggest surprise team in all of Major League Baseball is also a team we're watching on television right now. That would be the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that they're this good. They are 20-10 good right now. They are a game and a half clear of the Dodgers for the best record in the National League. They are a plus 36 run differential. They've won 9 of their last 10. Can anybody name a starting pitcher on the St. Louis Cardinals other than Adam Wainwright? Took you a moment, didn't it?
Can't think of anybody.
Can't even think of anybody. Miles Michaelis.
Flaherty.
Jack Flaherty.
There it is. I knew it.
Michael Wacha, and the guy who's pitching tonight, Dakota Hudson. None of these guys are household names. Jordan Hicks is their closer. He throws about 100 miles an hour.
105.
But I thought the Cardinals were going to be good. I picked them to win the division, if I recall, but I didn't see them running away to this kind of start. 20-10, they have been outstanding. They're my number two surprise team in baseball right now.
My number two surprise team is the Diamondbacks. Everybody would be lying if they would say that the Diamondbacks would be 5 games over 500, even at this point. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest addition to their team has been Adam Jones, in my opinion. The way he goes about it every day, the leadership he brings to the table. Obviously, you got a guy like Zach Greinke manning the starting pitching and leading guys from example that way. They're a solid team. I mean, they're not a bad team. They aren't a great team, but they're solid. They play good fundamental baseball. Padres have seen them, what, twice already this season? And both series, Arizona played well in. So, I personally am very surprised that the D-backs are sitting second in the division right now.
Yeah, I think everybody is. And as well as the Padres have played, the Diamondbacks, to me, are clearly a much bigger surprise than what the Padres have done. And that's why I put them on the list. And I didn't even put the Padres on my list.
Number one.
Number one biggest surprise in all of Major League Baseball. Wouldn't be a surprise if I just listened to my friend Tony Gwynn Jr., but I don't listen to him very often, and that's why it surprises me that the best record in the American League belongs to the Twins. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
The Minnesota Twins have the best record in the American League. The Cardinals are slightly better overall, but Minnesota, 19-10. I can hardly name a single player, let alone a pitcher, on the Twins. This is a bunch of no-name guys. Eddie Rosario, Jorge Polanco, Max Kepler. Nelson Cruz, I've heard of. Jonathan Scope, I've heard of. Marwin Gonzalez was a very underrated pickup,
yes,
although he's only batting 176. But the Twins are a bunch of no-names that are really playing well together, and you called it. You had them as a division champion. I did not see this coming at all.
Yeah, this is why they're not on my list, because it hasn't been a surprise for me. Number one on my list is the Seattle Mariners.
Okay.
Especially when you consider the division in which they play in. They play in a division that dang near had 200 win teams in there. You know, with Oakland last year coming up just short, you got the Houston come in, and yet this Mariners team sits 18-15, second place in the division, and they're doing it when they're supposed to be a rebuilding team.
Yeah.
Some of the teams we've mentioned today that are having problems aren't in the rebuilds. They are in, like, they're supposed to be competing. This team, as a surprise team, in my opinion, is a team that definitely threw up the white flag early as far as, you know, we're trading. I mean, the roster's something like a 75% turnover from last year to this year. So, very surprising. It's not all that surprising when you got characters like D. Gordon on your team. You walk in with a little bit more swag. And so maybe they're playing above their head right now, but got to give them the love right now.
It's working for them. They have slumped a little bit. They started 13-2, remember, and have gone 5-13 since then. But still over 500, and that is surprising because nobody expected that from the M's. I'm a little surprised that neither of us got the Padres on our list. But I guess that goes to what we expected, that they'd be better. And they are.
I think both of us thought that they would be a lot better.
Yeah.
And this is certainly something that, at least in May, is not surprising to me.
The countdown is now closed.
I tell you what, Michael, the first thing that comes to mind, I guess, for this year's playoffs, unfortunately, isn't the great play, even though there's been some great games and some fantastic performances. The thing that's coming to my mind is the officiating and all of the attention that's being paid to it. Is this of any concern to the league right now, that there's just too much talk about the refs?
That happens every postseason. I mean, you're always going to have conversations about officiating. It's all about gamesmanship, especially if you have a team that doesn't feel like it has a fair chance to win. You know, if they just go straight up, they're going to start griping about something else to give them some sort of advantage. Right now, you try to use whatever edge you can find, and if what's happening on the court isn't enough, then you're going to start griping about officiating. I really think it's kind of a lame conversation to have, and I really think that the play itself has actually overshadowed it. I think a lot of the talk about officiating is just a lot of crying, a lot of whining, and I wish people would just shut up and play.
Michael, you bring up a great point, because that's how I've been feeling watching this playoffs, is that this isn't anything new. It's been literally going on year after year after year. Team lose game one, they gripe, they gamesmanship, and, you know, that sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't. But why does it feel like, is it that the media is covering it differently? Why does it feel like it's excessive this year, whereas in years past, this was just kind of the run-of-the-mill type thing?
Well, there definitely is a lot more media coverage of it, but I think in particular with the Houston Rockets, which is sort of taking it to the next level by incorporating analytics and finding all these studies and, you know, all these breakdowns and analysis, you know, it just, they went over the top with it as if there's some sort of conspiracy to keep them from winning games. When I watched the game seven, I was there, and I saw them miss 27 straight threes. I don't care how many calls they thought they were going to get. You make a shot, you win the game.
Right.
You don't have to gripe about officiating. I mean, there's always going to be calls that you miss. These guys are human. They're not perfect. They're going to miss calls. You know, there's a lot of players. They do phenomenal things with their speed, their quickness, and their athleticism. It's probably the toughest sport of all to call, because there's so much action, there's so much going on, there's so much movement, all these guys doing all these things. You got three guys out there. You know, there was a time when there were two guys, and they said they had a third to try to alleviate that. It's still going to be more complicated. I honestly feel like I'd rather talk about what happened on the court. I'd rather talk about Kevin Durant getting 35 points. I'd rather talk about Draymond Green's emergence as, you know, a playoff, you know, steady in sports for this team. I'd rather talk about the fact that if Houston doesn't win this series, what does it mean for their future? What does it say about Chris Paul's future with all the money he's got coming his way? Can they find the right team to build around James Harden? These are the things that really need to be discussed.
Yeah.
Talking about the guys that they're really they really aren't the ones who decide the game. The players always decide the game. And I think that's really what we got to have the conversation about.
Hear, hear. Well said, Michael. So let's leave this subject and let's get back to the games a little bit, because I just think there's some great matchups. And obviously, Golden State-Houston is at the top of the list. I thought in game two, especially, Houston played very poorly. I mean, 9 turnovers in the first quarter. They're throwing the ball all over the place. They allowed Golden State 18 offensive rebounds. Golden State is such a great team. Houston cannot afford to give them free points, free possessions like this. How are the Rockets going to deal with that and get this changed around and try and make this a series?
Well, they're going to have to get Clint Capella to show up. You know, Draymond Green has done a great job of taking him out. I think one of the things all year is that, you know, the Hamptons 5 group, you know, that that's sort of been a problem all year. They haven't really dominated, but they have been a difference. You know, they with Iguodala, Draymond, KD, Klay Thompson, and Stephen Curry, that group has really been phenomenal when they're on the floor, and they've neutralized Clint Capella, who's a huge part of what the Rockets do. He's a guy that's always there to catch lobs. He's a great rebounder, but he's sort of been absent, and they've done a great job of nullifying him. They got to get him playing at the level that they're used to, and maybe that being home will help him, being in the comfort of, you know, having a crowd that's going to support him and push him. They also had to get more out of Chris Paul. Yeah. I mean, I know he's getting older, and he, you know, he's not going to be able to do what he did, you know, in the past. But they need more from him, and not just in terms of you know, say he got to get 20 points, 10 assists. They just need his spirit to just be somebody that's giving him positive energy. I feel like he's, when I talk about all the whining, I feel like he's at the heart of it. I feel like he's the main guy out there, you know, focusing on the wrong things. And as a leader, he's got to inspire his group. He's got to get these guys going. I mean, the line's been made, you know, by James Harden getting poked in the eye, and I think that did affect them. But I think that the guys that they're counting on, the guys that they've given these huge contracts to, they got to step up and play ball. And I think, you know, Houston's had his struggles, but they came around the second half of the season. They're a 4 seed, but we know that they have second seed talent,
yeah,
and they need to start playing like it, basically.
The Athletic's Michael Lee joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Michael, I want to talk about Kevin Durant, because he just seems to be really comfortable.
Because you love Kevin Durant.
Really comfortable in his in his skin. I mean, the way, the bravado in which he is doing interviews now. And then, to top it off, the way he's playing on the court. What is it about this time of year that seems to highlight Kevin Durant and his game? Because he, to me, right now, he looks like the best player in the world.
You know, he's been on this kind of playing, you know, since the season began. I remember talking to him, you know, in November, and he was just telling me, I've mastered the game. He told me, I've mastered the game, and he didn't feel like he had any flaws in his game. And he's been telling himself that, and he's hoping that everybody else will get on board. He's been saying for the longest that he's the best player in the game. Nobody wants to hear him. Everybody wants to say it's LeBron or somebody else or try to look elsewhere. But this guy's the one that was the best player on the floor the last two finals. You know, this is a guy that has an MVP, has 4 scoring titles. And it's when he's engaged and locked in on the defensive end,
yeah.
I mean, who is better than him? I think what he wants to do is to make the conversation about basketball, because all season it's always been about something else. It's always been about his emotional state. It's always been about, is he going to play for the Knicks, or is he going to go to the Clippers? Or there's all these conversations about things that he wishes people would shut up about, because he's not going to be able to make a decision until July. Right now, he's giving us the best show of his career. He's going out here. He's dominating. He's playing on an all-time great team, but he's clearly the best player. And I know people want to deny all of that, but he's clearly the best player. But I just feel like he's now controlling the conversation with his play. He's going out having 50-point performances, 45-point performances. Those are the type of games that he doesn't usually, you know, author up, because he's all about trying to get the team and trying to win. He knows what gets people talking is having a big scoring performance. He gave it to you, and now people are starting to open their eyes and see what's been in their face for the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's insane how great he's playing right now. I feel like he and Harden are the only two players in the league that no matter what you do defensively, they can still score. But Durant's doing even more than Harden right now. Michael Lee from The Athletic talking NBA with us, on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. I hate to skip over Denver and Portland, but I feel like those guys are kind of just playing it out. They're good teams, but they're probably not going to be able to keep up with either Golden State or Houston. So let's go to the East for a second. I got the biggest kick out of the reaction around the league, maybe just around the media, when Boston blew out Milwaukee in Game 1 and said, well, the series is over. The Bucks can't keep up with the Celtics. I'm like, are you kidding?
Paul Pierce said the series is over.
I know Paul Pierce said that, but it seemed like a lot of people believed that. And I'm like, are you really? I mean, have you not followed NBA playoffs before? These things can change pretty quickly. And obviously in Game 2, Milwaukee came back, blew out Boston. So where do things stand there now?
I always thought it would be a seven-game series. You know, I felt like Boston is just such a team that they have so many weapons. They come at you from all angles. That, you know, I call them the Wu-Tang Clan of the NBA because, you know, whenever the posse starts rolling, you never know who's going to step up and had a performance. Could be Method Man, Tony Stark, whoever you want. Somebody's going to bring it. That's where the Celtics are. But the Milwaukee Bucks have been the most consistent team all year. They don't have a lot. They had no major losing streaks all year. They were just steady. They were consistent. And they always maintain the same attitude because they're a disciplined group, and they take on the persona of their coach. You know, Mike Budenholzer, who always stays calm, measured. When that's your personality and that's who you are, you're not going to be blown. You're not going to get blown out and then all of a sudden say, we're done. You're going to come back the next day and regroup, and that's what they've done all season. So I wasn't surprised with how they came back. I feel like the series is going to take a while. I do kind of lean towards Boston as the winner of the series, but there's no way on earth I was going to count out the Bucks after one game. They have too much, and they developed too many good habits over the course of 82 games to dismiss them as some sort of fraud.
Michael, I won't leave out the Blazers. I want to go back to that series because I was already a Dame Lillard fan. I've become an even bigger Dame Lillard fan after watching him go up against Russell Westbrook in that last series and keeping his composure the way in which he did. Out of these two teams, Denver or Portland, who do you think can give either one of these top teams, we consider top teams, Golden State, Houston, who do you think gives them the best matchup?
I would say Portland because of Damian Lillard and the fact that he can explode. I think that it would be perfect. If a kid from Oakland gets to go up against the team from Oakland in their last season in Oakland, it writes itself. And he's the one guy that's capable of just going on a scoring barrage to sort of make it fun. I think that when it comes to Denver versus Golden State, when Golden State decides they want to turn the volume up, Denver just can't.
They can't keep up.
They start putting their hand on their ears. They can't keep up. And I think they're at the and they know it. They know they're not at that level yet. The Blazers aren't at that level yet either, but they do have guys who can get hot, who can get cooking and put up massive scoring performances that, you know, and in playoffs, they come down to stars. And I love Jokic. He's one of my favorite players. I remember his rookie year watching him play, and I was like, this kid's going to be special. And I could just see it. You know, I didn't know he'd be this good this fast, but he's really awesome. And I feel like, but he's not the kind of guy that you can rely on and just have a huge performance because he just is not in him to take over games like that. He's such a guy who likes to defer and keep his teammates involved. So I lean more towards Portland just because they have guys who can erupt.
Couple of seconds left with Michael Lee of The Athletic talking NBA playoffs. I can't get through an interview in San Diego and talking about star players without at least a mention of Kawhi Leonard and what he's done this season in Toronto. And, you know, whether or not they advance or not. I guess if they advance, then it all worked. If they don't advance, he's going to be considered a failure type thing. And there's so much at stake, whether he stays in Toronto for another year or not. How do you think the Kawhi Leonard situation is going to play out and the rest of this series?
Well, I picked Toronto to win this series in six. I still think that's how it's going to play out. I just think that just their overall depth and just the fact that they have the best player on their side gives them that decided edge. I feel like Kawhi Leonard, you know, he's been gearing himself up for this moment. You know, he's been wanting to be in the conversation to be among the best. I mean, ever since he came in third that year when Russell Westbrook won MVP and Harden got second, he came in third. He's been furious. He's felt like he's being slighted for whatever reason and people aren't recognizing his talent. And last year was really upsetting for him because he was hurt and he was going through his things with the Spurs where he didn't want to be there anymore. But now the Raptors have done everything right by him. They've low managed him enough to keep him fresh this time of year. And now he's at the stage that he's always wanted. And he's coming out there and he's balling. I mean, he's averaging 40 points a game in the first two. And like the other day, the Sixers held him to 35 and we're celebrating it. Like, oh, we finally found 35. And I think that says a lot about just how good he is and just about what he's becoming. But he's wanted this moment, and I don't think he's going to let it go. I think he's going to be somebody that's if the Raptors can get to the conference finals and maybe even get to the finals, then this gamble has definitely been worth it. But I don't even necessarily think it's a gamble, because of what it's done to change the attitude of that franchise, and also to give that fan base the confidence. You know, for years they've always hoped that they could do something in the playoffs. They've always hoped that DeMar and Kyle could take them there. Well, they actually have a guy who's done it. So there's sort of a certain quiet confidence now with the Raptors fans and with the organization, where like, yeah, we haven't done it collectively as a franchise yet, but we got a couple guys here who have. And we have a steady guy like Kawhi, who's going to bring it every night. We got another guy like Marcus Saul, who hasn't necessarily been to a championship, but he's been to the conference finals with the Memphis Grizzlies. He's been a foundational player for our organization. So they have sort of a different mindset. There's not that kind of panic or the kind of praying that things work out our way. They're just like, hey, you know what? If we go out there and play the way we're supposed to play, then we're going to win. And I like the attitude they have now. It's a different team.
Great stuff, Michael. Really enjoyed talking NBA with you. Hope we can do it again around the finals. We got to roll, but thanks again for your time. I love your stuff, and keep up the good work.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.